Ever wonder why you always grab a cookie at 3 p.m. or
Yeah.
like how do some people manage to change like their entire lives just by changing one small thing?
Yeah.
Today we're going to be diving into the world of habits
Yes.
with Charles Duhigg's The Power of Habit.
Great book.
It's an awesome book
Yeah.
and it's packed with insights, and we're here to pull out the most useful ones, especially for you.
It's true. Habits are often running the show behind the scenes, right? And Duhigg, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, he does a phenomenal job of uncovering how they work and, more importantly, how we can use that knowledge.
Exactly.
So
And he
good.
doesn't just drop science on us. He brings in these captivating stories,
Yeah.
like Lisa, who quit smoking
Yeah.
and kind of inadvertently transformed her entire life
Right.
because of it. It's like a domino effect.
Yeah, what's so fascinating about Lisa's story is what's so interesting is that it wasn't just willpower, you know? She stumbled upon the power of keystone habits, the idea that certain habits can trigger a chain reaction,
Right.
leading to positive changes in other areas of life.
Okay, so that's definitely something I want to explore further.
Yeah.
Those keystone habits sound like game changers.
For sure.
But let's back up for a second.
Okay.
For anyone unfamiliar with the science behind habits, can you give us a quick breakdown?
Absolutely. Duhigg lays out this really clear framework called the habit loop.
The habit loop, that's the foundation, right?
It is. Think of it as a three-part cycle: a cue, a routine, and a reward. So the cue is the trigger. It could be a time of day, a location, an emotion. It signals your brain to go into automatic mode and initiate the routine, which is the habit itself. Then you get the reward, the payoff that tells your brain, hey, this loop is worth remembering.
So, using my afternoon cookie craving as an example,
Okay.
let's say my cue is that 3 p.m. slump.
Yeah.
The routine is grabbing a cookie,
Right.
and the reward is that sugar rush and that brief escape from work.
Exactly. And the more you repeat that loop, the stronger the neurological pathway becomes.
Like a well-worn path in the woods. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But Duhigg goes beyond just identifying the loop right. He gives us tools to actually change our habits.
He does, and that's where the real power lies. Understanding the loop is just the first step.
So if I'm ready to break free from that 3 p.m. cookie run, where do I even begin?
Duhigg would say the reward is a great place to start. It's not always as obvious as it seems. You know, it's about the craving the reward satisfies.
Okay, so in my case, I always thought it was the sugar rush,
Huh?
but maybe it's something else.
Exactly. Duhigg suggests like experimenting with different rewards. So instead of that cookie, try a walk outside or like a quick chat with a colleague or even a piece of fruit.
Right.
And by consciously swapping out the rewards for a week, you can pinpoint what's really driving that craving.
That's a really practical tip. I like that.
Yeah.
It's like A/B testing your rewards to figure out what your brain truly seeks.
Precisely.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, once you've identified the real craving, you can move on to the cue.
Okay.
Remember, the cue is the trigger for your habit loop.
Right, that 3 p.m. slump for me.
Yeah.
But how can I change that? I can't exactly stop time.
You can't stop time, no. But you can change your environment or your routine.
Okay.
So Duhigg suggests keeping a log, like for a few days, and noting down specific details about when the urge for your habit hits. Where are you? What time is it? Who are you with? What were you doing right before the craving?
So, like detective work for your habits.
Exactly.
By tracking those details, you can start to isolate the specific cues that are triggering that habit loop.
Exactly. And once you know your cues, you can start to change the game.
Okay.
Right? For example, if you find that seeing the clock strike 3 p.m. is your cue, try changing your scenery at that time. Go for a walk, move to a different room, call up a friend.
Right.
By disrupting the cue, you disrupt the automatic response.
That's a brilliant strategy. It's like redirecting a train before it falls into its usual track. Okay, so we've experimented with rewards, we've isolated the cue. What's the next step in breaking the habit loop?
The final piece, and arguably the most important, is having a plan.
Okay.
It's not enough to simply recognize the cue and understand the craving. You need a clear and actionable plan to replace the old routine with a new one.
So in my case, if my cue is seeing the clock strike 3 p.m. and I realize my craving is actually for social connection, my plan could be to walk over to a colleague's desk for a quick chat instead of heading for the vending machine.
Now you're getting it. It's
Yeah.
about being intentional and having that strategy in place. This is where Duhigg's concept of small wins comes in.
Small wins. Tell me more about that.
Duhigg argues that breaking down big changes into smaller, more manageable steps, small wins, is key to building lasting habits.
Right.
For example, instead of trying to overhaul your entire diet overnight, start by swapping out soda for water.
Right.
Each small win creates a sense of accomplishment,
right,
which fuels your motivation to keep going.
That makes so much sense. It's less overwhelming and more sustainable in the long run. It reminds me of that old saying, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Exactly. Now, we've talked a lot about individual habits, but Duhigg takes it a step further and explores how habits operate on a larger scale in organizations and even entire societies.
That's what I find so fascinating about his work.
Yeah.
He connects those individual actions to these bigger social movements. It's like a ripple effect.
Exactly. Think back to the story of Rosa Parks and the Montgomery bus boycott. While her act of courage was a pivotal moment, it was the collective power of shared habits that truly fueled the movement.
That's right. It wasn't just about one person's actions. It was about a community bound by shared beliefs and a common goal who collectively decided to change their habits. They stopped riding the buses. That's a powerful example of how individual habits, when amplified by social connections, can create incredible change. That's right. It wasn't just about one person's actions. It was about a community bound by shared beliefs and a common goal who collectively decided to change their habits. They stopped riding the buses. That's a powerful example of how individual habits, when amplified by social connections, can create incredible change.
Absolutely. And Duhigg digs deeper into this idea by explaining the difference between what he calls strong ties and weak ties in social networks. So strong ties represent those close relationships, right? Your family, your close friends, those you interact with regularly. Weak ties, on the other hand, are those more distant connections, acquaintances, people you might see at the gym or in your neighborhood.
Okay, so how do these strong and weak ties play into habit change?
Well, Duhigg argues that both are essential for spreading change. Strong ties provide the trust and support you need to stick with those new habits, while weak ties offer fresh perspectives and access to a wider network.
So in the Montgomery bus boycotts, those strong ties within the Black community provided that initial momentum and unwavering support, while those weak ties, perhaps with sympathetic individuals or organizations outside their immediate community, helped amplify their message and broaden the impact.
Exactly. It's fascinating how those social dynamics work together to create a tipping point for lasting change. Oh. But there's another side to this social influence on our habits that Duhigg explores, one that's a bit more unsettling.
Oh, this is where it gets really interesting. You were talking about the way companies are using habit science, right?
Precisely. Duhigg reveals how companies like Target are using data to predict and even manipulate our habits, often without us even realizing it. He shares this rather startling example of Target's data analysis program that could predict which customers were pregnant, in many cases, even before the customers themselves had publicly announced it.
Wait, Target knew before the women even did. How is that even possible?
By analyzing purchasing patterns and seemingly insignificant changes in buying habits, like suddenly buying unscented lotion or vitamins, Target's algorithms could identify pregnant shoppers with a surprisingly high degree of accuracy.
Whoa. That's both impressive and a bit unnerving, isn't it? It makes you wonder what other hidden forces are shaping our everyday choices.
It certainly does. And that's the point Duhigg leaves us with this critical question to ponder. In an age where data is king and algorithms seem to know us better than we know ourselves, how do we maintain awareness of and ultimately control over our own habits?
That is a question we all need to be asking ourselves. Right? Like Duhigg is handing us a magnifying glass, urging us to examine not only our individual habits, but also the larger forces that might be influencing them. Well, there you have it, folks. We've journeyed through the fascinating science of habits, explored compelling real-world examples, and unpacked practical strategies to reshape our own behaviors. But as we've discovered, it's not just about understanding our individual choices. It's about recognizing the powerful influence of social connections and the often invisible forces shaping our world. So as you go about your day, pay attention to those seemingly small actions, your routines, your rewards, your triggers. Because within those everyday habits lies the potential for remarkable personal transformation and even societal change. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.